From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I have to confess that I have weeded out and discarded a lot of press releases and new product announcements I've received each week as a garden writer all these years, touting this new gimmicky gadget or other. But there's one announcement I look for each year, as I have for the 19 years it's been issued. It's from the specialty public relations agency called Garden Media Group, and it's their annual Garden Trends Report. More on what it forecasts for 2020 in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Katie Dubow is creative director of the Kennett Square, Pennsylvania-based Garden Media Group, a women-owned and run public relations firm specializing in the home and garden industry and celebrating its 30th year in business. She's also author of the agency's annual Garden Trends Report, which is our subject today. So welcome, Katie.
Thank you so much, Margaret. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm not kidding when I say I look forward to it because it makes me think, this report each year kind of makes me think, and you know, we should probably say right away, it's not like this is the, some scientific-based, enormous research report from some governmental agency or something like
this. Correct.
Right.
We're a group of people in Kennett Square who put our heads together and we talk to leaders in the industry to figure out what's trending. And, you know, I think like you, a lot of people look for it, but it's just fun. You know, we have a lot of fun doing it and we don't expect everyone to just go out and change everything they're doing. Just like you said, we want people to think.
Yeah.
Maybe make a few changes, but just, you know, what do you think about it?
Yeah. And so that's from garden center owners to product manufacturers and even the public, yes, to think?
The public, yep, growers and media such as yourselves and everybody who, and you know, we also look at outside of our industry too. We look at the fashion industry, we look at the home industry because, you know, I love gardeners, but we've never said that we're a group of trendsetters, I think. So
no,
we look outside of our industry to see what are some of the changes happening out there that may affect us.
Right. So let's backtrack for a second of sort of a quick What's Garden Media Group question, because I feel like, if I recall correctly, the story sort of begins with your mother, Susan McCoy, and an early client of hers, I think, was like the American Mushroom Growers or something.
You got it. Yeah, the way she tells the story, and she's my mom, so Susie McCoy is my mom,
and
she started this business when she put me on the bus to kindergarten.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, especially an important year for me as I put my daughter on the bus to kindergarten this year also.
Oh, wow.
So it's really, it's really coming full circle. But she worked here in Kennett Square with the mushroom industry because Kennett is the mushroom capital of the world. And from that work, she met the Conard Pile Company who bred the Knockout Rose.
Yes.
They're also here in our backyard.
Yes.
And they saw the work that she did and they said, you know, we're launching this little rose. It doesn't have a name and we think it could be a game changer, but we'd like your help with it. So she worked on that for the next 10 years.
So from mushrooms to the Knockout Rose success. So, and all this time, really, I've been a garden editor for 400 or 500 years. So, but you've done the Garden Trends Report for, what, 19 years,
19,
I think it is now?
This is our 19th report.
Yeah. And so trends. So even the casual garden shopper will have noticed trends. You know, like one year you go into the garden centers and there's a million orange flowered things that, you know, the year before there wasn't so much orange or whatever. And there's that or like Calibrachoa, you know, the like little miniature looking petunia things. Well, you know, maybe 10 years ago or so there were one or two and then suddenly it takes up a whole giant area of the garden center. You know what I mean? There's those types of things that even us who are not doing analysis could say, oh, I don't remember that, having that much real estate before. But, you know, you're looking at, as you said before, kind of, you know, input from a lot of different places. And what are some of the things, you know, over the years? I mean, I think in your first report in 2001, you really correctly forecast like a growth in so-called outdoor living. Do you remember that?
Yes. Well, I wasn't working here then, but I do remember, I mean, I've read all the trends reports, and the fascinating thing was at that time, it was the era of the McMansion.
Yes.
And so, you know, people had TVs outside. They
yes.
were installing literally outdoor living rooms. Their kitchens outdoors were magnificent. I think, luckily, we have shifted a little bit, and we still have outdoor living rooms, but it's because our spaces inside are maybe a little smaller, and so we can expand our life outside by having extra rooms. But yeah, that was the new living room.
Right. And so the trends along the way, the sort of headline trends, you know, the buy local, that was one that you talked about, I think, 2008. And obviously the native plant interest kind of coming around, and the related one about pollinators. I mean, something like pollinators and natives, it seems like they've gone from trend to like a permanent fixture, right?
It's true. When Cheerios is talking about them, you think they're mainstream, right?
Right. So this year, you know, in 2020, the table of contents to your report, and we'll give the link so people can, you know, browse through and whatever and see the whole thing, but with the transcript of the show, I mean. But a lot of the topics had an environmental bent to them, you know, even though it's not, again, this is not a report from, you know, the Department of whatever on climate change or something. But a lot of them had an environmental thought in them, yes?
They do, absolutely. And, you know, that's not something that we even were quite aware of until someone brought that up to our attention. And they said 7 out of 8 of them, and they missed that. Even the color trend has a little bit of a sustainability
bent
to it.
It does,
And, you know, it's not that that wasn't on purpose. It's just that that's the way, you know, that's the trend. That's the way the world is going.
So let's kind of go through the table of contents a little bit. You know, let's kind of give everyone a little sense of what you're forecasting.
So the way that we do our trends, and the reason that they're listed this way is because we start more on what's happening on a global scale.
Uh-huh.
And then it kind of goes down into how it affects your backyard. Some people might not be seeing our first trend, which is called Cities of the Future. Mm-hmm. You know, it might not be something that's so close to home. And as we get deeper into the trends, they're really, really close to home. So our Cities of the Future one is just that, you know, right now, more than half of our world lives in cities, but that's expected to change by 2050 and to 70%. And so with the number of people that are moving into our cities, things are going to have to change about our cities, not just to accommodate those numbers of people, but to be a city that attracts the kind of person who wants to move to a city. How are you changing your city to be more green-facing? And that really is the big change here, and how it affects our industry is the rise of this thing we call the Central Recreational District.
Okay.
So I'm sure you've heard of the CBD, a different kind of CBD that maybe is trendy right now, but the Central Business District.
Yeah.
It's the general downtown. Well, this is a new area that cities will have that include greenery. You know, it's parks, historic places, and, dare I say it, Instagrammable places that will attract this younger person to move into this area and to live in this city. It's just going to be an element that a city must have to attract people to it.
And so urban trees kind of have to be reinvented in a way, too. The old sort of street tree system may not work as well. We have to have some good sustainable urban trees for a future in a changing climate, and as you say, these green spaces that are accessible, not just one park in the outreaches, but more integrated.
And I'm glad you brought up trees, because they're such an important, you know, I think that oftentimes we have tree blindness. We think they'll always just be there. So it's important to plant the right tree and the right plant. There's not a lot of research done about what trees and plants work in this kind of urban environment. So what will work?
Right. And then after the sort of cities of the future, the report talks about a circular economy.
Yes. Have you heard of that term before?
You know, it was funny. I had not.
Yeah.
So that interested me.
I hadn't either as we started researching it. You know, it's as our cities grow, we need to envision our cities as a place that things do not leave it as trash. It keeps moving around and around. And so a circular economy, the definition of that is that basically you're taking your trash, and instead of throwing it in a landfill, you're being able to reuse it. And the reason that we need to do that is because, you know, as a society, I don't know, Margaret, did you ever darn your socks?
I'm not that old, Katie. but no, and you know, and right, we get a hole in your sock and you throw it away. And
Exactly,
this is our mentality, right?
Yeah, 9% of our materials now globally are reused. So that is our mentality.
Only 9. It's terrible.
9%. Yeah. Terrible. Yeah. So we need to make a change. And that change starts, you know, it starts with us, but it also starts with our big companies.
Right.
And so some might think that according to that, you know, because we're reusing things, that it would be a detriment to companies, but according to one study, it actually says we could generate trillions, $4.5 trillion in new output by 2030. So it's not that we are just going to be, we still are going to want to eat peanut butter. We're still going to use toothpaste. It's just about how those packages are created for
right.
us.
Right, right. And that, you know, so with just 9% of the materials globally that we consume being reused, and you, I think in the report it says that, like, global consumption overall has tripled since 1970, I mean, something's got to give. So you're talking about that in the report. And then you're moving on to, we can just quickly mention, you know, sort of there's going to be in this economy also a need for or more green collar jobs, as you call them in the table of contents.
Yeah, you know, and I love that term, green-collar jobs, because it's not looking down upon this segment of the workers that maybe don't need a PhD in our industry or
right.
any industry for that matter. In fact, I just read a study that really hit home with a lot of people. I shared it on my Facebook page from PBS that said that right now we just our country has put this generation in millions of dollars of debt, of college debt,
right.
for what? For what?
Right.
We have 30 million jobs in our country that pay an average of $55,000 per year and don't require a bachelor's degree. And a lot of them are in our green industry. So
right.
it's really just about kind of shifting that model on its head about looking at education and diversifying the way that we look at education and really fulfilling the need. Because in our industry, the number of jobs outnumber the number of candidates 2-1.
Yes.
People aren't. There's a great organization. Do you know Seed Your Future?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A great organization that, you know, just encourages younger people, elementary and middle school students, to garden. And they are, you know, that age group are so interested in pollinators. They're so interested in growing their own food. But when you ask them, what's horticulture? They look at you like you have two heads. And
right.
what is horticulture?
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a little bit about education.
Probably the next, you know, group of things in the table of contents were the ones that appealed to me the most as a gardener, you know, because they're a little closer to home maybe. The next one you call endangered soil, and there were some pretty shocking thoughts in that about really where we're at with how we treat soil and where the soil situation is at on the planet right now.
Yeah, the endangered soil one is probably, if I can say it's my favorite, but it is the most
right.
dire. It's one I like to talk about the most because it's something that you can make a change in your own backyard today. You know, we really can do something about this. And the statistics, as you said, so as we know, prior to the 20th century, our farming was different. We didn't develop as much. There wasn't as much of this climate, these climate catastrophes that were causing this erosion. And deforestation, and I could probably go on and on and on, but
right.
the statistic is that it's wiped away one-third of our world's topsoil, and that
right.
if we continue with these trends, that our soil, this topsoil that we so need, will be gone by 2050, according to the UN.
Right, and it, literally the whole entire food chain is based on the soil life and health. And as you say, we can make changes in our own backyard, and we can also, I think as important as we can make changes with our pocketbook, we can give our dollars, we can support and shop from players who support soil health as opposed to conventional farming, products created in conventional farming and so forth. So, you know, I mean, I think in a way it supports supporting organic farming and,
yeah.
and good proponents in the industry who manage their soil better.
Exactly.
And putting your dollars there. And I mean, I think of that as from starting with where I get my seed to where I buy my food, all the way along the line. So not just my own backyard, but that too, you know, can help
so
with
true.
That. Yeah.
I apparently in the United States, only 10 counties in the U.S. grow more than 10 crop varieties. So we really, it's all, like you said, it's about that. Starting at the seed to moving to the farmer that you're choosing to buy from to growing in your own backyard. You really can make a difference. And the real trend that I'm seeing here is called regenerative gardening.
Right.
It's like you said, organic. It's building on organic gardening. It's doing all of the elements of organic gardening, but just having the idea of putting the nutrients back in the soil. It's adding that extra layer of regenerating your soil because that will also help sequester carbon.
Right. And there is evidence that there are companies now who are onto this, even large
yeah.
corporations that we've heard of, who are realizing and who are making a contribution in this direction that are alert to it.
They are. And, yeah. You know, I sometimes look at some of those and I think it's just lip service. But it does seem like there are some that are actually, I mean, even General Mills has committed to regenerate 1 million acres
right.
and fund farmer trainings. And that's really what we need is, you know, we know how stressed our farmers are. So to be able to give them the resources to make the right choices.
Right. So we go from there to, in the report, we go to sort of beyond, it's almost like a new form of organic certification that you're kind of talking about, or that came up at, I guess, at the Natural Products Expo and elsewhere this year. People have been talking about sort of going beyond just the plain organic standards. Is that the idea?
Yeah, and you know, this is a little controversial because do farmers and others, you know, supporters and growers need another certification?
Right.
But this helps people understand that your farmer that you're choosing is not just practicing organic, but they're also dedicated to rejuvenating the soil, also fair trade and animal welfare practices. So it adds a couple things to that organic label, which is great, but again, do we need, you know, now we're non-GMO and we're organic and we're OMRI, and so it's a little controversial, but I think it's important because it's consumers, they say, according to Nielsen, half of U.S. consumers would buy a brand if it's committed to the environment. So we as consumers, as you said, vote with our wallets.
Right, right. A couple of the next things in the report I loved, because some of them, in one case, it wasn't so much environmental, sort of thinking, you called it thinking outside the house and kind of about houseplants and beyond. We could talk about that in a minute. But there were two more that were kind of environmental. One you called the frog whisperer and one not just some fungi. And those in quickly, just sort of quickly explaining, you know, talking about these sort of helper creatures that we also have to help and support, like the frogs, the animals closer to the base of the food chain.
Well, you were a big trendsetter on that frog trend, with basically you could call Instagram Frogstagram for you.
I think. I know, right? I'm a frog lady. Yeah. And I've appreciated them. You know, people have asked me for decades. You know, every year I get the same questions. And at one point every year, it's how do I get rid of the slugs eating the holes in my hosta leaves or whatever plant? And I'm like, you know, get a snake, get a frog, you know, and I don't mean get one. I mean make a supportive place where they're welcome, and that goes back to regenerative gardening, right?
Yeah, I was presenting this trends talk to a group of garden center owners, and one of them asked me, how do I attract frogs? How do I get frogs? Where do I get them? And I said, well, it's just, you know, it's just like pollinators. Frogs, as you said, are indicator species.
Exactly.
If you don't have them, you need to plant for them and provide habitat for them.
And stop
and
using...
If you build it, they will come.
And stop using store-bought, you know, chemicals and other things,
exactly.
too. Yeah. So the fungi one was in there, and I love that, and we can talk about that if we have time. But I want to get on to one thing that it kept making me think about that I think you and I have in common. I go out and give lectures, and you know, either to large cooperative extension groups or smaller garden clubs or whatever, and I look out into the audience and everyone's my age or older. And I'm concerned and I wonder how these trends or trends in general that you see, because you go around the country and you talk about this to people, and even beyond that, you talk about what you see, the pulse that you see and so forth. But I wonder, do you feel also that gardening, you know, is not being handed down to the next generations? Now, you're a young mom, yes? You're much younger than I am. You're a young mom. You love it. I think you're a judge at Philadelphia Flower Show. Is that right? So you obviously have the bug has bitten you. But I wonder, how are we doing, and which of these trends or what trends? I mean, they used to say what? Windowsill herb gardening was the gateway to gardening or something. I mean, what's really the case, do you think? What's the hope?
Well, you know, I used to say that too. Herbs are the gateway drug to gardening, but it seems that they are not, and that it is houseplants. And it really is fascinating to see the change in, and I don't know if you've been to a houseplant swap, one of these new meetups.
But no, nobody in my remote town of 300 people has invited me to one, Katie.
Well, maybe you should start one.
I will do.
In your free time. But I think what is so interesting is, as you said, listen, garden clubs, the African Violet Society, the Orchid Society, these things are, they're starting to wane. but it was the concept of these tribes. We got together with people who were like-minded. We were able to talk about things that we all loved, and it just created that sense of community. And you're right, we have moved far, far away from that. And that's why this is another trend this year. You know, houseplants are trendy, but the real trend here is the way that they are creating and cultivating this sense of community. And so if you look in our trends report, we have a few pictures of plant swaps. And there are people doing them all over the world. But the group of people, not only are they young, they're still majority women, but not only are they young, but they're extremely diverse. And that really excites me about this future generation, is that, you know, houseplants are attracting all types of people, which, to be honest, is, you know, our industry was a little exclusive in the past.
Yes.
Not on purpose, but it just didn't attract a very diverse group of people. And so it is a diverse young group of people who are attending these house swaps, plant swaps.
Yes.
And what I love about that is that it's interesting to me, these are unique varieties of plants. They want to know the family. They want to know the species. They want to know all the things. They want to speak Latin. They want to know all the things they can about these plants, how to grow them, exactly what kind of light requirements they require. They want to fertilize them organically. So this is really exciting, and I see this as really the big shift that will happen. And it's not going to happen tomorrow, because right now this group of people, as you know, we've studied millennials, right now they're living in smaller spaces. They don't have a ton of money,
yes,
and they are a little bit stressed, which is one reason they've turned to these indoor plants. But once they do move up and they get their own little slice of the, you know, of the earth, they have a little yard to cultivate, I strongly believe that they will, this houseplant trend will cultivate to the outdoors.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. On Instagram, you've mentioned Instagram, and, you know, I love seeing and I follow a number of people who really their entire expertise and stream is about houseplants. And you see them talk about monsteras and this one and that one, you know, these different plants that when I began gardening were rarities, relatively speaking. And now, thanks to big changes in technology with micropropagation and, you know, the ability to multiply plants, rare plants, faster in many cases into, you know, almost not big box, but almost big box, and in some cases big box proportions, you know, numbers. These things are available. There are things that are available. And if you know what you're looking for and they look really cool, and as you say, you can get the information on social media from someone who seems like you, then, you know, yeah, you want in. Whereas the old way, those herbs never quite worked on a windowsill of an apartment, did they? I mean, it was a good idea, but it was really still for backyard growers.
Exactly. You couldn't really get enough to make it worth your while. And this is, you know, it's a kind of creating that circular economy where people are finding about them online, they're getting together in person, and then they're sharing them again online.
Yeah.
And so it's just this, it's spinning, and it's spinning really beautifully, you know, I would say out of control, but it's true there. I do believe that it is fueled by social media, because people are connecting online and finding their tribe.
Yes.
They are also meeting up in real life. Life.
Yeah. So give someone young, someone that you know and love who's young, give them a houseplant this Christmas and spread the word of plant parenting, right,
yes,
to them.
Exactly.
Yeah, yes.
In fact, this one new plant, well, it's not, you know, this one rare plant, String of Hearts, do you know that plant?
Yes.
It crashed a plant company's website because when they said they were going to launch it, so many people came to the website.
It's funny, and succulents are really, really hot. Yes,
succulents.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Dolphins. There's a lot of different kinds of things. But you're right. If you give them a houseplant, and then give them a couple of, you know, Instagram influencers to follow, and they'll be hooked.
So, in the last minute, Katie, any trend that you feel like you've missed since you've been doing the report?
Well, the one famous one, as you said, as you know, we started this off, you walk around garden centers. One that everyone, I'm sure, has seen is the fairy gardening trend.
Yes.
We didn't, you know, since I've started working here almost 10 years ago, we missed that one. We missed that one.
Margaret missed it too, Katie. Margaret missed it too.
Well, then we can agree on that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that's one. Well, that's okay. I'm going to forgive you for that one. But as I said in the introduction,
you know, Katie Dubow. I really enjoy when the report comes out. It gets me thinking, and it gets me thinking about things like I just said about young people and how we can invite them in. And I think that's one of the really big, important mission statements for your company, for the garden industry, for me as a communicator in the garden world. So I appreciate you're stimulating those kinds of positive thoughts.
Thank you.
I hope to talk to you again soon.
Yes, thanks. Me too, Margaret.
Okay.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And I hope to talk to all the rest of you again soon. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or at Facebook or on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.